Janabalaba Gidivadadhari. Gopi Janabalaba Gidivadadhari. Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Jamuna Tira Banachari. Jamuna Tiravana Chari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janavallabha Gidivadadhari. Jai Gopi Janavallabha Gidivadadhari. Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Jasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Jamuna Tira Banacharin. Jamuna Tira Banacharin. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, dear Pundarik Vidyanidhi Prabhu, for singing. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskrityam Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Mudirayet Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavat Sevaya भगवते उत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर भवती नैष्ठिकी. Okay, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 20. We are going to read the verses, directly the translation for 36, 37, 38, 39. And the verse 40 would be our focus verse. Well, we'll do Sanskrit. Okay. So, verse number 36. Could you bring up the translation, Prabhu? Sanskrit only for the verse number 40. Yeah. Verse 36. Oh, beautiful woman, when you strike the bouncing ball against the ground with your hand again and again, your lotus feet do not stay in one place. Oppressed by the weight of your full-grown breasts, your waist becomes fatigued, and your clear vision grows dull, as it were. Pray braid your comely hair. Verse number 37. The asuras, clouded in their understanding, took the evening twilight to be a beautiful woman, showing herself in her alluring form, and they seized her. Verse number 38. With a laugh full of deep significance, the worshipful Brahma, then evolved by his own loveliness, which seemed to enjoy itself by itself, the hosts of Gandharvas and Apsaras. 39. After that, Brahma gave up that shining and beloved form of moonlight. Vishwavasu and other Gandharvas gladly took possession of it. And then verse 40 is where we'll do Sanskrit. So please repeat after me. Srishtva bhuta pishasamscha Bhagavan atma tandrina Digvasaso mukta keshan Viksha chami layadrishau Srishtva bhuta pishashamscha Bhagavan atma tandrina Digvasaso mukta keshan Viksha chami layadrishau Srishtva bhuta pishashamscha Bhagavan atma tandrina Digvasaso mukta keshan Viksha chami layadrishau Srishtva bhuta pishashamscha Bhagavan Atma Tandrinam Digvasaso Mukta Keshan Viksha Chami Layadrishau Srishtva Bhuta Pishashamscha Bhagavan Atma Tandrinam Digvasaso mukta keshan Viksha chami layadrisho of the mothers. Srishtva bhuta pishachamscha Bhagavan atma tandrina Digvasaso mukta keshan Viksha chami layadrishau Srishtva bhuta pishachamscha Bhagavan atma tandrinam Digvasaso mukta keshan Viksha chami layadrishau. Thank you. Srishtva bhuta pishashamscha भगवानात्मतन्द्रिणा दिग्वाससो मुक्तकेशान् विक्षाचामीलयदृशौ सृष्ट्वा हैविंग क्रिएटेड भूता गोस्ट्स पिशाचान फीन्स च एंड भगवान लॉर्ड ब्रह्मा आत्म हिज तंद्रिणा फ्रॉम लेजीनेस दिग्वाससः नेकेड मुक्ता डिशेवल्ड केशान हेयर विक्षा सीइंग च एंड अमीलयात क्लोज्ड दृशौ टू आईज ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पट बाय श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय. The glorious Brahma next evolved from his sloth, the ghosts and fiends. But he closed his eyes when he saw them stand naked with their hair scattered. Purport. Ghosts and mischievous hobgoblins are also the creation of Brahma. They are not false. All of them are meant for putting the conditioned soul into various miseries. They are understood to be the creation of Brahma under the direction of the Supreme Lord. ओम अज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानंजनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरुवे नमः. नमो ओम विष्णुपदाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवास आदि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. थैंक यू वेरी मच फॉर पार्टिसिपेटिंग इन द मॉर्निंग श्रीमद् भागवतम क्लास. फर्स्ट एंड फॉरमोस्ट आई ऑफर माय हार्टफेल्ट ओबेसेंसेस टू हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद. बिकॉज ऑफ प्रभुपाद्स राइटिंग्स बिकॉज ऑफ प्रभुपाद्स मूवमेंट बिकॉज ऑफ श्रील प्रभुपाद्स इंस्टीट्यूशन दैट वी आर ऑल गेटिंग दिस अपॉर्चुनिटी टू बी हियर. I'm getting an opportunity to read something and share some things that I've understood. You're getting an opportunity to participate in festivals and opportunities. So we wouldn't be here without Srila Prabhupada. So thank you, dear Srila Prabhupada. I also offer my respectful obeisances to my spiritual master for always encouraging me, guiding me in spiritual life, and inspiring me to contribute to the movement in any little way I can. And my heartfelt gratitude to the leadership of Neuramanriti Temple for allowing me to be of service to all the Vaishnavas. I've said this before and I'll say it again. Speaking at Neuramanriti is an experience just because of the association, the quality of devotees that are present in the community and in the assembly. And it's always a humbling experience. So for today's verse, my central thesis would be understanding Brahma and the context, the human context in which Brahma is present and he's doing his creation. So we see that he creates something, he gives it up, he has laziness, the laziness is giving birth to some entity. So we see that somehow these attributes that are present that we find in ourselves and that we complain about possibly, how do they exist in Brahma actually? He's creating somebody from sloth. And the idea that Brahma is called as a Bhagavan in this verse. It's a term that is mostly used for Vishnu avatars and Lord Krishna. But here, Brahma is called Bhagavan, and at the same time, it's being said here that, oh, and there was sloth in him, there was laziness in him, which created something. And so, how can we see the creator of this universe within these limitations, and how does that allow us to see our own limitations? So that's going to be the structure for this class today. And then we'll look into the human context, the analysis of the two verses, and then conclusion and takeaway. So before I get started, one thing I want to mention is that I do have a confession to make today, actually. So when I found out that I'm giving this class, I saw my verses, I was ready, I prepared for it. I double-checked everything, only to realize that I made a mistake. And the verses 3:20, 39, and 40, somehow I prepared for 3:29, 39, and 40. And I had the whole class prepared over the weekend. I was thinking, writing about it. I said, yes, I got it. I like to prepare. I like to be in advance, just read about it, meditate on it, write about it. And just last night, I thought right before going to bed, and I'm recovering from a cold, so I was feeling a little hazy. Let me just double check the verse. And I opened the website, I checked the verse, and it was 9 chapters earlier. And when that happened, obviously I had a minor breakdown in that moment that, oh no, it's the wrong chapter. And it's not even one or two verses around, it's 9 chapters. It's a completely different topic. I had a whole thought of, how do I connect forgetfulness? It's in conversation between Kapila Muni and Devahuti. And then suddenly this verse came, and I was praying that, Prabhupada, may there be a powerful purport there that I can read through. And the purport was 2 lines, and I realized that, oh boy, okay. My first reaction, fear, embarrassment, beating myself up. How could I make such a basic mistake? I'm the one who who's supposed to be together with everything. And it's part of an identity that I always prize myself on, that I got this. I will prepare, I will research, and then suddenly everything flipped. I also had a conflict at work, so that was contributing, and I was sick, and I was realizing that, wow, when does this stop? This sudden calamity that just came out of nowhere, and now what do I do about it? How do I deal with it? So as I was sitting with it, and then something shifted, that my mistake, can I reframe that mistake and the idea of making mistakes in the context of this verse? And through that mistake, can I pray for divine intelligence and guidance? Because what that allowed me to do was to get into a prayerful mood. The mood I was getting into was, I'm prepared, I got this, I know I've done public speaking all my life, I can speak, versus Krishna, help me. Krishna, help me. I have no clue what's going to happen tomorrow. And I am really struggling physically, mentally, and this conflict. And there's an old childhood part of me that struggles with insomnia and anxiety from before. And I saw that part flare up very strongly overnight, twisting and turning. And it gave an opportunity to be prayerful. It gave an opportunity to really humble myself and ask for grace and ask for help. And to see what can I speak from that standpoint. So I want to explore this idea of limitations and laziness through the lens of Brahma, also what's happening for Brahma. So the context of this chapter is, we are in Canto 3, right? It's the creation canto. Most of the conversations are between Maitreya Muni and Vidura. Same with this, it's Maitreya Muni speaking to Vidura. Vidura is asking, Vidura has this idea of curiosity, understanding and asking. So Vidura is asking that, how did this creation, so the chapter before was the killing of Hiranyaksha, the earth was established in the orbit, that's how this chapter begins. And then the question and answers begin that, how did Brahma create? What was his process? Now that the earth is established and situated, what happens then? And so Maitreya Muni is describing the whole process, and then he comes to this point where Brahma has created this, he created these 2 demons which are about to attack Brahma. Then the next thing happened, which is that Brahma created this this other yakshas and rakshasas, man-eaters, and how they were impacting Brahma, and Brahma prayed, and then this twilight formed this beautiful lady that appeared, and then how she disappeared, and then Brahma did creations of Gandharvas. And then this verse, he's creating the ghosts and the fiends. And Prabhupada writes in the purport that actually this is directed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we see this interesting story of creation that's taking place here. And then Brahma is, and the crucial point amidst all of this is Brahma is giving up his identities. It is said that Brahma gives up his body and takes up another body, and Prabhupada writes in the purport that it's not that he's giving up his body, he's giving up the mentality associated with that body. And so giving up that mentality almost means that we give up a certain body, because the idea is that the thought creates reality. So Brahma's mind, his mental situation creates the reality. and he gives up that identity. And to me, that was very interesting, because yesterday was the advent of the Bhagavad Gita. We saw the recitation, beautiful recitation, all across temples. And one of the core principles of the Bhagavad Gita is also Arjuna's shift of his identity. Arjuna thinks that he cannot fight because they are my loved ones. And Krishna brings a shift in his identity to realize that, oh, actually, my real identity is a servant of you, to be a servant to you. And that's the identity from which I should act. So similarly, something similar is happening here for Brahma. His identity, he creates something from that identity and he realizes that, oh, no. And then he shifts his identity and then something else creates and then something else creates. And I was realizing it the same way that all of us, I realized that my identity was that I know how to speak, I know how to prepare, versus realizing that I don't have anything, versus the identity of, oh Krishna, can I be a recipient of your grace? Can I really sit here in a humble mood and pray, not coming from the ego, not coming from the pride, not coming from someone who has done this before, who knows how it goes, but can I really be in that humble space? And that's a shift in identity. So we see this idea of shift of identity happening throughout. So one of the key principles here is the identity of Brahma, which is being shifted. And each verse, if you see on this chapter, there's a different set of creation happens. Because he's thinking something else, the mental body is created, and from that, a creation is taking place. Now, so one of the core principles that I wanted to talk about is this idea of mistakes, making mistakes and limitations and sloth and that Brahma experiences. There are variety of human contexts that are given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Vedic scriptures that we deal with. Last time when I spoke here, October 16th, I believe, I spoke about the anartha profile, that we should write about our anarthas, and not in general, but specific to us, that what is my specific anartha? And in a very similar vein, something universal that is given in across our Vedic canon is the idea of the human context. And I'm going to talk about 7 layers of this human context that exists for us. And we'll see where Brahma fits and where I fit and whatnot. So these universal contexts is what everyone deals with. That's what the Shastras talk about. The question isn't that, do they apply to me? The question is, which ones am I in denial about? And understanding them, I have found in my own spiritual life, understanding them and recognizing them has opened up more doors for personal growth and personal development. So, number one, the first level of human context, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, right? Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita talks about it. Janma, birth as a human context, that we all take birth. There are demons taking birth here. Brahma took birth. And it's given as a challenge, as a problem in the material context. Why? Srila Prabhupada writes about it, that birth, one who takes birth has to die. He cannot avoid death. So birth is a necessary human context that we all have to deal with. We don't remember the trauma we felt when we were born. We read about it in the Bhagavatam. Kapil Muni talks about it, that how the jiva in the womb gets through so much suffering and trauma and pain, and we forget about it. Conveniently, Krishna makes us forget them so that we can continue our life. Yet, janma, birth, is a necessary human context. Am I in my life, and we can all ask in our own lives, are we cognizant of this idea of janma, that we have all taken birth? We were all in a womb at certain point in time, struggling in a confined space. And that is a necessary human context. And if spiritual life is not taken seriously, then very likely we may have to experience the human context of janma again. It's given in the Shastra. It's celebrated. Birthdays, we celebrate that, oh, it's such a happy day. However, the context of janma is real. And how can I make it real versus treating it as a philosophical context? The other human context is mrityu, death. How can I make death as a principle, not just as a philosophical principle, that something will happen one day, versus how is it coming for me? The idea of Krishna in the factor of time. How is that coming for me? How will it affect all my near and dear ones? Very likely in 100 years, none of us will be here. None of us will be in this temple room. Maybe 50, maybe less. How is that context relevant for me? How can I think about it? How can I make it real in my life? Many cultures say that don't talk about the idea of death, but it's real. And our Shastras actually speak about it. They actually qualify the idea of death, and they even glorify the idea of dying in a Vaishnava way. We have the Ragatmika and her initiative also about how to die, the care of devotees, and then really how to pass her body and how to leave. So death and dying is also a human context. Am I really making it relevant for myself in my life? Jara, the old age, the human context of old age. This body is going to get old. The functions that I were able to do earlier may not be true for me later on. And then it's going to come to a point where physically I won't be able to do certain activities. How am I resisting the human context of old age? Am I trying to hold on to the idea of I'm young physically, or am I accepting and embracing and slowly realizing that, yeah, that's the nature of time? And then vyadhi, disease. I'm struggling with it. I was sick for last week or so, and am I denying the idea of vyadhi that I will never be deceased? Am I denying it in other people in my life, somebody who's struggling? And can I see the human context that this is part of the material existence that we go through? How would my priorities shift today if I internalize this idea that all of these things will happen to me, since and I have to go through the material context? The other level of human context that our Shastra talks about is the three miseries, tapatray, adidevika, adibhautika, adhyatmika. Now, what does that mean? Adidevika, miseries from higher powers, natural disasters, rains, hurricanes, weather, planetary influences. Adibhautika, miseries from other beings, other human beings, animals, insects, germs. Adhyatmika, my own mind, anxiety, depression, fear, disturbance that I felt last night that are related with this. Which misery do I blame for my unhappiness? That, oh, this is happening to me because of, I got to go to an astrologer. I got to fix this. Well, guess what? Adidevika exists and will continue to exist as long as we are in this planet, as long as we are in the material universe, so to say. So these miseries exist. Can I embrace it? Can I accept it? And can I appreciate that, okay, I get it. This is the situation I am in. What miseries that are coming from outside, do I recognize it as universal human condition, or do I take it personally? That, oh, this is happening to me. No, this is universal. Every one of us, if the victim mentality comes in that, oh, I'm struggling, for instance, why am I sick, Krishna? I have to give this class and I have to do these things. No. Sickness is prevalent all around the planet, all around the universe. Prabhupada used to say death rate is 100%. And my own mind, miseries from my own mind. How am I denying my existence of my own mind and not accepting that maybe my mental health is impacted by circumstances from my childhood, from my situations right now? Can I accept these miseries as given rather than as problems to be solved, as given as part of the necessary law that I get when I chose this human condition of life, when I made that? How might that shift my inner state? How will I see Krishna differently? How will I see my spiritual master differently? How will I see people in the community differently if there's someone that I don't vibe with, I don't gel with? And then I recognize that the situations and the struggles that I have, the human context is shared by these people also. Would that make me compassionate? What would that do for me? Can we really think our way out of these miseries? Krishna says no to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna went through all these kleshas. Arjuna had adibhautika, misery from other beings. Adhyatmika, misery from his own mind. And yet Krishna's instruction is that Arjuna tolerate and focus on what you need to do. But accept it. Realize that this exists. This situation exists. How am I in denial of the human condition of life? The four defects, dosha chatushtaya. Prabhupada writes in Adi Leela 286 that anyone materially born is subject to these four defects. Brahm, mistakes. I made a mistake last night. That, oh, this is the worst. Oh, no, that's not the worst. Can I accept Or do am I expecting perfectionism from myself, or can I accept that I make mistakes? Can you all accept in your life that you have made mistakes and it's part of the human condition, instead of beating myself up for it or living in regret that I shouldn't have done that 30 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever that was, only to realize that it's the human condition. We make mistakes. We will continue to make mistakes. Krishna says in the Gita that every endeavor is covered by fault, just like fire is covered by smoke. When Krishna is making that argument, then who am I to expect perfection from myself and beat my older parts for not knowing what to do? All the way sometimes up to our childhood, we go and, oh, I shouldn't have done that, or dealing with children in our life. Mistakes, we make mistakes. It's part of human condition. It's given in our Shastra. Prabhupada writes, rope for snakes, shell for gold, to err is human, he quotes about it. Pramad, inattention or illusion. Prabhupada said that accepting this body is pramad, which means that I get into illusion. I have a tendency to be illusioned in this world. Can I accept that reality, that I will be illusioned by different things in this world and I wouldn't understand and I wouldn't know? How am I denying that idea? Vipralipsa, cheating propensity. That Prabhupada says that especially amongst businessmen, each trying to think, how much can I cheat him? How much can I cheat them? But we all have it, the cheating propensity, in a maybe little way, in a bigger way. Can I try to look good and work my way around a relationship, a situation, but in reality, how am I cheating? How am I cheating myself? What do you speak of cheating others? Which of these defects shows up most in my life? Am I avoiding the idea of that I make mistakes? Am I avoiding the idea of that I get illusioned? Am I avoiding my own cheating tendency to myself? Or the last one, karana patva, that means that imperfect senses, that my senses are imperfect. No matter how much I embrace perfectionism, it won't happen in this material context because it exists. The jiva goes for perfectionism because in our spiritual essence, we have the same qualities as Krishna, Satchitananda, quantitatively less, but qualitatively. But physically, we have these challenges with us. How am I denying these realities? Prabhupada also talks about ahara, nidra, bhaya, and methun. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending as for human contexts. How am I avoiding this reality that I need to eat, I need to sleep, I need to defend, and I have tendency to mate? Which propensity has the strongest grip on my life right now? Am I willing to admit that honestly? Krishna says in the Gita, what would repression accomplish? Or where am I repressing versus accepting that this exists and I need to work my way out of it, versus repressing or denying that, nope, I don't need to eat, I don't need to sleep. Krishna says in the Gita, yuktahara viharasya, that we have to do it in regulation. So where am I denying this human context? The other human context, the four goals of life, purushartha, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. Dharma means a religious duty. Artha means economic development and wealth. Kama means sense gratification and pleasure. And moksha, liberation. Of course, we understand through our tradition that we have a pancham purushartha, fifth one, which is prema bhakti. But before we get to that idea, which of these four goals are dominating my life right now? Is it appropriate to my ashrama or my situation? Am I too much into artha, not recognizing it, denying it, that, oh, I'm earning for Krishna, but in reality it's for my own gratification and for my own material security? Even if it's not gratification, I need to be secure and safe in this world. What about moksha, that I want to just get away from these all troubles and situations? And this is, in one sense, we can argue that Arjuna's whole point of running away from the battle was in terms of, I don't want to deal with this. And sometimes that translates to the idea of moksha. This material world is too much, I don't want to deal with it. Versus Krishna's way, answer is the way through it. Daktenu kampasu samikshamano, Krishna. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is described that one who goes through these sufferings becomes the rightful heir to the kingdom of God. Can I accept it that I have these human contexts and they are dominating me? Can I accept that brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, all the ashrams that I may find myself in different ways of life? How am I denying those ashramas? If I'm in grahastha ashram right now, can I accept the responsibility, or am I rejecting or fighting against that? If only I could just be a monk and be in an ashram, or if I'm in the ashram, if only I could get married. If I'm a vanaprastha, I just need to be with my family versus focus on spiritual life. If I'm in sannyasa, can I focus on the ultimate goal that's been given to me of this ashrama? How am I living mentally in different ashramas in different places? And then finally, the three modes. Which mode is active in my life right now? Which is my normal operating mode in life? Am I operating out of passion for the most part? Am I operating out of ignorance? The worst, Atma Tandrina, Brahma's laziness, is Tamoguna manifested. And that's what gave birth to those beings. So the mode that I am in dictates the quality of my life around me. Sattvic mentality is different. We know from the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Even the creator of this universe is not exempt from these modes. Which guna is dominant in my consciousness today? Where do I cling my spiritual identity to? Right? Am I spiritually ambitious? Or is that Rajaguna seeping into my life? These are some great questions for us to reflect, and some questions that I was reflecting on in my own life. That how is this human context present when I sat with the idea that I made a mistake and physically beating myself up for it and remaining in anxiety to recognizing that this is part of the package. When I signed up the contract, the agreement to come to the material world, I did not read the terms and conditions. These are the terms and conditions. This is bound to happen. You're going to get through Janma. You're going to get through Mrityu. You will have laziness. You will have these challenges. Can you accept that I signed up for it? It's like the Avanti Brahman accepting responsibility in his life. Can I accept the responsibility that I chose all these things? Not that I'm a victim at their hand, that why is this happening to me? Or am I committing spiritual bypass that, oh, Krishna is giving this to me? Yes, in one sense, Krishna is giving. In other sense, Krishna is also honoring our choices. What choice have I made? Can I accept that I chose these things? Or are we like Brahma, who created the pishachas and ghosts and covered his eyes? Brahma covered his eyes. I can't see this. What have I done? What is created? It happens earlier with him also, these demons who got created and who were chasing after Brahma. And what does Brahma do? He goes to the Lord. He said, Lord, help me. I'm really stuck. Brahma is trying to do his job. Part of his job is also to do things that he's not proud of. How do we resonate that within our lives? So this is the human context. Brahma himself had some laziness in him. He's the Acharya in one sense. We consider Brahma as the Acharya for Sampradaya. But we also talk about Brahma Vimohan Leela, how Brahma gets bewildered. So our Acharya is showing by his own example that how these things, and Brahma is technically not even a human, and yet the context of material world, technically this is all context of the material world that exists. In verse 39, Brahma talks about the idea that he created these beautiful Gandharvas and then he gave them up. The word described is called Priyam. Sometimes we see that word Priyam in reference to Srimati Radharani. You know, Hari Priya, the word that is used, Yatha Radha Priya Vishnos. Right? So the word Priyam. So it is said that Brahma cherished the creation of this moonlight and the Gandharvas. You know, these are Gandharvas are these celestial singers, beautiful singers that were created. Vishwavasu was their king, and yet Brahma had to give it up. So Brahma had to give up something that was dear to him. This is the nature of our duty, that I create something in this world and I have to give it up so that I can continue doing my work. That's the lesson from Brahma. Radharani is called Gandharvika, as a side note, the most celestial, beautiful singer in the planet. Now, in the verse 40, we see that Brahma is called Bhagawan. It's such a contrast I was noticing. He's called Bhagawan, and the next line is called Bhagawan, who was lazy. It is said that Brahma is Bhagawan, but Atma Tandrina, from his own laziness. Now just think of it, the two ideas that are mentioned here, that if somebody is called Bhagawan, which is a name reserved for Lord Vishnu and Vishnu avatars and tattvas and Krishna, is called lazy suddenly in the same time. Because Bhagawan is a position that Brahma entail, not Bhagavan with a capital B, but with a small b, of the role of the creator. And yet, he was experiencing laziness. So if he can experience laziness and be impacted by it, should I beat myself up for feeling it? Or should I just embrace it and not do anything about it? Or should I just see that, okay, this is my lot, this exists. So Brahma also feels tandra. Tandra, tandrina means drowsiness. So sloth and laziness that comes up. And then who does he create from that laziness? Bhuta. Bhuta means to be, something that was, so ghosts and pishachas. So these beings are real, Prabhupada writes, and they serve a cosmic purpose. So the stories of the ghosts sometimes we may have heard and experienced in real life. It exists. It is there in our Shastra. And the creator himself was unable to see it. So where am I going with this as I come to the conclusion of this class? Brahma experiences the human context in the two verses, and it mirrors our own life. In verse 39, he released something that was very dear to him. In verse 40, he created something out of laziness. In the earlier verses, he also created something that he wasn't proud of. And the lesson for us is that this human context, these moments of human context of my own mistakes and limitation and Brahma's situation of laziness, do I consider them as obstacles to my spiritual life or as a way to strengthen my spiritual life? That they are my spiritual life in a lot of ways, accepting my lot, accepting my situation. The whole Bhagavad Gita is, before Krishna goes to Divya Gyan, transcendental knowledge, Krishna hammers the idea that you are a jiva, Arjuna, because to establish the context that this is where you are, and then I'll tell you what your duty is and what spiritual knowledge is. But you got to be rooted, right? Sambandha Gyan is the first principle. The idea of understanding our human context is the idea of establishing ourselves in our Sambandha Gyan. That can I really live here, recognize that this is the perimeter that I find myself in? And from here, can I start my authentic path of bhakti? Not a path of bhakti that is avoiding these anarthas, that is avoiding this human context, but as something, someone who accepts it, who realizes that these exist. And my Lord, can I now pray to you from this situation? Can I now ask you for help in this situation? That I've acknowledged the mess that I've created, I've acknowledged the choices that I've made, and I've signed up on this agreement that I forgot that I signed up, and I'm blaming you, Krishna, or I'm blaming the society or the circumstances, or my parents, or whatever. The past can explain our present, but it cannot take responsibility for it. Only I can. I can take responsibility. So can I accept the responsibility that I may make mistakes? And it's a question for me, it's a rhetorical question I'm asking for myself. Can I take the responsibility that when I chose this human condition of life, a part of it was that I will make mistakes and I will be in limitations and illusion? And I welcome you all to do so. Quick recap. 7 human contexts are universal. Brahma also operates and gets limited by it. Brahma has to create things that he's proud of and give it up. Brahma has to create things that he's not proud of and be impacted by it. All gunas bind. Ghosts and pishachas are real. Even the creator gets bewildered. And the mistake that I made in preparation of this verse in this class is the teaching itself. That I make mistakes. Human context is inescapable. The question is not to escape them. The question is how to use them as a fuel for our surrender to Krishna and recognize. Now from this lens, if we see the writings of Narottam Das Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Acharyas, when they write with the level of humility and depth, we see, at least I can see that, obviously, that humility would arise in our hearts. Not that we have the same level of humility, but we can aspire to get to that point, recognizing that, oh, my situation is actually really messed up. The human context is really messed up. And can I see it for what it is? And can I witness it and recognize that, my Lord, what have I done? What have I created in this life? And can I take all of this and put it to the feet of Radhishyam and pray for empowerment and pray for growth? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. If there are any questions or thoughts, comments, corrections, I'd be happy to take them. Microphone, please, here.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the wonderful class. Trying to connect the context of Brahma and the human beings. So in case of Brahma, I know you're mentioning that he was proud of his, sometimes he was proud of his creation, sometimes he was not proud of his creation. So whatever is happening in the life of Brahma, because he is being created to have all the creation take place, right? That's the purpose of Lord creating the Brahma. So again, so from the Lord's perspective, what Brahma is doing is helping Lord in creation. So from the Brahma's perspective, he's feeling that, okay, he's proud of some creations, not proud of other creations. So from Lord's perspective, he's not doing any mistake. Brahma is not doing any mistake. But in our case, like, we are here trying to enjoy. We are not directly, all our actions, in Brahma's case, all his actions are pertaining to service of the Lord. In our case, all our actions may not be. Most of us, unless you are fully devoted to the Lord, you are completely surrendered, then all of your actions will be controlled by the Lord. But most of us are in the process, so all of our actions are based off our conditioning. So in our context, like, if we feel bad or good, that makes sense. But in Brahma's context, his feeling about being proud of his creation and not proud, being guilty, how is that like? Can you just elaborate a little bit?
Thank you for your question. I think the short answer to all of that is personalism. The question is that when Brahma is doing his job of creation, Prabhu is saying that from Brahma's perspective, he feels that, oh, I like this part of my creation, I don't like this part of my creation. But from Krishna's perspective, Brahma is doing his role, his job of creation. So he's saying that Brahma is still feeling that way, but Brahma is still doing it out of his duty. But compared to us, the living entities, Prabhu is saying that we are just enjoying in this material world. We are also not given a role like Brahma to play. So what you're saying is Brahma's feelings are almost irrelevant in one sense, that but ours is more, it's more pronounced for us because we are not even doing Lord's work, right? That's what you're saying. So, well, the answer is simple: personalism. The idea of one of the core reasons Prabhupada came to this planet, this universe, this world, is to establish personalism, right? To defeat impersonalism. And the whole principle is Brahma is a person. Brahma is also a person experiencing emotions. Krishna experiences emotions. We see about it. The whole Rasa Shastra is all about the emotions of Krishna and the devotees. Brahma experiences his emotions. Despite doing his duty, emotions will come that, oh, I don't like this part, or maybe I could have done differently. It's the aspect of personalism. So not that his feelings are invalid, and yet, yes, he's doing his duty. Obviously, he's doing his duty. And now, when it compares to us, our situation, yeah, there's no comparison between our situation and Brahma's situation. We do struggle with our senses, our challenges, and yet, even if we try to do our duty of our ashramas, we'll still get through the same challenges because the issue exists at the level of personalism, that as persons, we can never be homogeneous entities. We will feel emotions. The whole principle is emotions, right? The five primary rasas, the seven secondary rasas. The idea is how we feel these emotions. So even Brahma, even Krishna feels it when he comes and appears, and we know the whole Shyamantaka jewel story where Krishna's name was being framed and Krishna says that, oh, I got to clear my name up. And so the emotions, the emotionality of the jiva cannot be taken away, regardless of whether we are Brahma or we are the living beings. I think the experience would remain the same, is what I wanted to say.
Ask one more question.
Yes.
Is it just the emotion, or sometimes even Brahma gets into delusion that, oh, I am the creator, so I don't like this creation. Forgetting that whether I like hobgoblins, whether I like ghosts, it is because of Lord's wish to create them. I am just creating them. I should not be really affected with what I am creating. Or sometimes you get affected with, oh, I am the creator. That illusion. He also falls into the illusion.
100%.
That's why this identification or like and dislike comes into picture.
100%. We know that story. I don't know the reference, but the story of many Brahmas lining up outside Krishna's palace, right? And our Chaturmukhi Brahma with four heads, he comes that, oh, I am the supreme, you know, I am the creator of this universe. And then he sees all these Brahmas lined up, and then obviously Brahma feels that, oh, Krishna, wow, there's more Brahmas out there with more heads that exist in this world. So as long as because Brahma's position is still material in nature, right? Brahma is still not a spiritual position or a spiritual. So with the material position comes the material context, right? So it has to happen, right? It has to happen that bewilderment will take place, because it's not because of the fault of Brahma. It's the issue of the being in the material situation, right? It's the same principle as us, that as jivas, we have made choice to be here. And that with that choice comes the consequences of the choice, which is the material situation, right? So, thank you.
So the bewilderment, we are also getting into the bewilderment every day in and day out. But the most important thing is how to quickly get out of it.
Is that the question, or is the question that can I accept that I get bewildered?
Exactly.
And can I pray?
Yeah, I accept I get bewildered, yeah, because I'm conditioned. How quickly can I come out of it so that I don't get affected by that bewilderment?
I would ask you back to reflect on this, whether the idea is to how do I quickly get out of the bewilderment, or can I accept this and pray to Krishna that help me, get me out. Send your representatives. Yeah. Krishna, help me. That please, it's like Gajendra in the example, that I can try my best to get out of it. I can try, or Draupadi, let me try. Or can I come to that point? Or can I pray that may I come to that point, Krishna, where I realize that I cannot solve this situation. I cannot solve this situation, and I need your help. And up until I come, Prabhupada was asked that how quickly this transformation takes place. And Prabhupada says, one moment, right? He emphatically argues, one moment. But to get to that one moment can take up a lifetime. Can I get to that one moment that I cannot solve this, Krishna? I'm really at your mercy. Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to say that I like the point that you made about we can't like think about anything to get ourselves out of the illusion. Yeah, because the illusion is meant for us to be illusion. There's no getting around it. It's practically an extension of God Himself. So we're not going to be able to think our way out of the illusion. The only way is, like you said, to pray or chant.
Yeah, the illusion, the term is also maya, right? Ma means not, and ya means exist, something that does not exist, right? That's also part of the illusion process. So it's Krishna's energy. Krishna talks about it in the Gita, right? That it's one of my energies, and it's very hard to get out of it. He makes that argument. Krishna says so in the Gita. And so prayer, and the power of prayer, the power of sincerely asking and authentically asking that help me get out of this, versus, oh, maybe I can do this, or maybe I can try this self-help book, or maybe I can try this methodology, or no, it doesn't exist, or it doesn't impact me, versus, no, it's very real. Prabhupada was asked, right, that Prabhupada, what do you fear most about your disciples? He said that they are not afraid of Maya enough. And afraid of Maya literally means the human context, the material energy. Because I don't accept and embrace the human context and realize fully that this is the human context, I'm not afraid of it. That's just life as usual. When I really see the impact of it and that how it's present, then I can begin to get into that moment of, this is a real challenge. This can really bind me. Thank you. Yes.
I can't get away from your making that point that birth is a trauma. I've just never considered that. Mm. When you think in the context of psychotherapy, et cetera, you know, trauma, a wound from some calamity, But it really, what prompted you to refer to the birth as a trauma?
Well, birth is one of the first human contexts that is mentioned in the Shastra, right? Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadhi, Dukkha, Dosha, Anudarshanam, right? Janma is the first one. And so, and the description of Kapila Muni, that the jiva goes through so much distress through the process of birth. So much distress. And the identity shifts, right? The identity of praying, Krishna, please help me. I'm not going to take a material birth again. I promise Krishna, I'm going to surrender to you in this life. I'm tired. I mean, think of it. Just visualize with me that if you're in a sack of flesh with blood and all kinds of things, just huddled up, the fetal position. The jiva is fully conscious. We know that. The material science says that the body is not, but the jiva is full. It's jiva experiencing the body of a womb, of being in the womb. Krishna, I don't want to be in this situation. For months, I don't want to be in this situation. And having come from a human form of life or maybe animal form of life in this situation and fighting that, my Lord, I just want to get out of this. Imagine being in a confined space for a little bit, you know, under that pew for 10 minutes and we're like, oh, I want to get out of it here. What to speak of 9 months of it in a body that we really can't do much about? We can't choose any of our eating, sleeping, mating, defending, none of our habits. We are just at the mercy, and the jiva is praying and crying, and crying and crying, and help me, help me, help me. And the moment comes out crying. And the moment the jiva comes out, gives up that body and takes up the new identity. Your name is Rasa. Your name is this. Oh, these are my parents. Suddenly I see it, that's what they're calling me, so that's who I am. That becomes my identity. And I've conveniently forgotten that trauma that existed because I've shifted my identity. So the fact of Janma, recognizing that that's a traumatic experience for the living being. The parents are, happy birthday, you're one, you're two, you're three. Oh, I'm born in the material world. Oh, this world is meant for as a reformation place, for me to get back to my source. Oh, I've forgotten my source. What is the goal of my life ultimately at the end of the day, right? So, thank you for asking your question. Okay, one final, because we are out of time.
So we know that the soul and in the body, the womb, is praying to the Lord that, okay, bring me, quickly take me out of this uncomfortable situation. What about the souls which were earlier atheists, but now are in the womb of a body? What is their prayer? In their previous life, they don't even believe the existence of the Supreme. So what are they praying for? Suffering is common to every soul in the womb. What are they praying for?
I don't know the answer to that question. One can guess from the readings of the Acharyas that the experience is still experienced by the jiva who is in the womb. Now, if they were atheist in the previous life, maybe that was an identity, maybe that's a different identity. But what Kapila Muni is describing is the experience remains the same. The experience of suffering and struggling and get me out. Even an atheist can feel, even if they don't believe in God, the idea of get me out of this situation, when how can I get out of this situation? This is horrible. Because it does not mean that if I become an atheist, laws of karma don't apply, the human context don't apply. No, it very much applies. The idea of atheism is that I, with my limited intelligence and my scientific methods that I've concocted and created, and using those limited methods to understand the divine doesn't work. That's what atheism is, right? Oh, I don't believe in God. Yeah, you don't have to. You'll still struggle. You don't have to. So I think the experience can remain the same. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.